Let's start visiting with Stephen Esposito, the Executive Director at Wealth and Wealth Advisor, Senior Portfolio Management Director at Morgan Stanley in Lake Forest. Stephen, thanks for joining us again. You're on WGN.
Well, thank you for having me.
Looking at the S&P, we're following all of the markets here. We do every day. What are you seeing about the performance on that?
Markets in general have been weak over fears of course, the Delta variant and the possible, and of course, the possible slowing of the economy, which has a lot to do also with the supply chain issues and the 9.2 million jobs that are unfilled. So there's a lot of moving parts of this market that is confusing investors right now, and I think that's just causing some uncertainty. A little bit of selling, but I think it's really a buying opportunity.
Well, interesting. So you think there's still value in the market right now, huh?
I think underneath the index surfaces is a lot of value, especially in the cyclical companies. They led for the for 9 months up until early June. For about 6-7 weeks now, they've been trading sideways to down. Again, fears of the Delta variant and lockdowns reversed that trade. And now if you look at the earnings reports coming out and the projections by those companies, they keep raising numbers, and they're raising them a lot despite what's going on. So I just think the recovery is going to be explosive and historic once we get through the Delta variant and those fears going forward. And, of course, the supply chain issues are really holding back the economy. I mean, they're really holding it back.
We thought we would be there by now, but we're not. Although I do remember last year, whatever the news was about COVID, therein went the markets. Up, down, up, down, up, down. Is it sort of trending the same way? Remember when the news came out about a vaccine, everything went up, and then they said, wait, maybe the vaccine doesn't work, and things went down. Are we still going to trend relative to COVID-19?
I do think headlines will control the market short term. There's a lot of algorithmic trading, a lot of traders in general out there that are moving based on headlines or articles that may come out or just a tweet from somebody. I just think the investor, the investing public, needs to look at opportunities like this to buy good companies at cheap prices. And when you look at what Wayne Gretzky said, you skate to where the puck is going, not to where it is. And I think the entire recovery is just being pushed out a little bit more, but the more you push it out, the bigger the boom's going to be on the other end. So I just think Q4 is going to be spectacular, assuming we get over this hump with Delta and nothing new comes out of left field. I think the demand is there. The supply simply is there. It's coming. And when it does, you're going to see earnings reports that are going to be simply too low for many of the cyclical companies.
What's happening with the supply chain?
It's a combination of a whole bunch of things. You shut down the world's largest economy or the economies of the world with a light, like a light switch, which has never happened before. And then sooner than anybody anticipated, you turned it back on again with the vaccine coming out and the recovery being this quick. So it's hard to reboot the world economies that quickly, especially since Europe is still having issues. They're still closed down. Canada's closed down. Some of Mexico. There's areas of the world that are still nowhere near where we are, so it's just hard to reboot something that big, but the demand is so far out ahead of it. Talk to anybody. You can't get a washer, you can't get a dryer, you can't get a car, you can't even get a window. When those orders start coming in and people start ringing the register, you're going to see spectacular demand, and I think come September when a lot of people are going back, kids are going back to school, yeah, and hopefully, and work, you're going to see that 9.2 million job openings start to get filled quickly. And then it just starts to snowball from there.
Yeah, I've been betting and banking on October 1st for that reason. It's kind of weird, isn't it, that you've got 9 million job openings and you've got 9 million people unemployed. I know that they don't all line up perfectly, but you think that problem would solve itself, and it really hasn't.
Well, it's just a phenomenon. Again, things we haven't never seen before. We're in historic times now. But again, you've got to look through it all, and what you just said is a good point. But there will be a lot of that matching up going forward. And when it does, those people will be back to work, they'll be spending money, employers will be able to handle the order flow. Remember, it's not a demand issue right now. I know people own restaurants, they're closed 2 days a week simply because they don't have the staff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's not about demand. Car dealers I've talked to that normally have 200 cars on the lot have 20. So when that all starts catching up, and remember, a year and a half ago, there was a shortage of toilet paper, hand sanitizer, and everything else. And that all caught up. So this will catch up. And I believe our scientists and our medical professionals will take care of this. They always do. And as confidence returns, and it will, I think it's going to be one of the best holiday seasons you've seen since World War II.
Yeah, I hope that, and maybe it's going to be a lot of online ordering, too. I mean, if you thought there was a crush for delivery people last Christmas because if people don't go back to work, if they're not, I did a whole segment today with people who are frustrated when they go to a McDonald's or a Target or a Best Buy, and there's three people working there. And if we have all this pent-up cash that wants to get spent in the fourth quarter, somebody's got to be there to run the register. So I'm anxious to see how that plays out, too.
I agree with you, but I do think you will see a lot of that fill up as you get in to September, October, et cetera, the last 4 months of the year, and really into 2022 as well. When that starts to fill up, and honestly, when you go into many of the stores, there's no inventory. So it's a frustration that everybody feels, but it's coming. It'll come back. Everything's in cycles. And when it does, the bigger the bust, the bigger the boom, and vice versa. So I think you're right. I think also bricks and mortar is doing much better than everybody anticipated. Don't be shocked to see some real explosions in that group.
How about that? Stephen Esposito is on the line, Executive Director, Wealth Advisor, and Senior Portfolio Management Director at Morgan Stanley in Lake Forest. A couple more questions for our guest in a minute. Also, I'll just note that Heather Long, the economics reporter, who's been with us many times, she's terrific, from the Washington Post, has done some reporting on what happens when you give people that unemployment benefit supplement. Does that encourage or discourage employment? We'll talk to her about that in the next half hour. Stephen Esposito's on the phone line from Morgan Stanley in Lake Forest. By the way, Stephen, everybody is obligated when they come on the Wintrust Business Lunch to talk about inflation these days. What's your read on that?
I think it's transitory. I've been hearing about inflation since the 70s. And, you know, deflation, inflation, it just constantly flip-flops. I think what you're getting here is some inflation, I think, is good a little bit. And I think seeing individuals get raises will help them go spend more money and enjoy life better. So I think that's all positive. But I do think business can adjust to it. And I think because there's so much liquidity in the system, people can pay for that and now with a problem and doesn't hurt them per se. But generally, I think it's transitory. I don't think it's going to last more than 6 to 12 months, and then it'll start to calm down and come back to some degree of normal.
Transitory because of these supply chain issues and the pandemic itself, mm-hmm. right?
Well, people, you're paying them more than normal because of the fact that you can't get labor, so and people need it, and businesses need it, so you're doing the same thing with, you're right, the supply chain issues. So that will all just calm down, and we have the great deflationary tool out there called the Internet, where you can buy anything anywhere in the world and get better pricing, and there's remote access, et cetera. All of that, you know, plays a role in keeping costs down. So I think that'll all come back in equilibrium, and then we'll be fine.
Household spending is what it went in June. I'm trying to remember now. Did it go up or down, household spending?
Well, household spending is continuing to go up and will because there's so much liquidity in the system. And I think that's just going to get better. Remember, people will spend when they're feeling good and when they're comfortable. And if they're not locked in their home, they may go online, but generally they'll pull back. There's trillions of dollars on the sideline waiting to move. And as people get jobs, they'll have more money to spend. So there is a tsunami of capital out there waiting to get into the economy and the financial markets. So I would get ready for that. I would get ready for it.
Absolutely. And that, I guess, is to say nothing of the $1 trillion that hasn't yet been spent on this infrastructure bill. Do you see that as a positive factor in the near term?
I think it could really extend the recovery through 2022. Going forward. The key, though, I think you got to watch is interest rates. That's important. But I do think the spending and liquidity and the demand will take us through, especially remember when Europe opens up, all the demand from all these other countries that have, for all intents and purposes, been locked down for a year and a half. Travel overseas, all that's going to happen. So I think all of that liquidity in the system will help extend this recovery, and what I think will be a boom going forward through most of 2022.
But most of the indices are being lifted by less than 50% of the companies. Maybe that's true all of the time, but it makes one wonder how healthy the underlying stocks are, how healthy really is the economy. What's your thought about that?
It's interesting. It's a very good point. I've been talking about this for years now. The indexes, to me, no longer represent the broad market. I mean, there's 6,000-plus stocks, and in the Dow, you have 30. The S&P, you have 500, but as you point out, a handful of those companies make up the majority of the index, and they're tech-heavy. The NASDAQ is mostly a handful of companies, so it doesn't really represent the market. We all refer what the market's doing by the indices. To me, it's the breadth of the market that matters, the underlying companies, many of which is what I'm referring to, that are trading at single-digit multiples with healthy dividends. Those are what I like. And you'll see the percentage gains in earnings per share going forward.
Mm-hmm.
The majority of surprises to the upside will be in those companies that are off the radar.
You've got any names for me or
I wish I could share those with you, but I'm not allowed to.
Really?
Morgan Stanley rules. I could tell you sectors, though.
Yeah, well, let's do that then.
Let's look at the financial sector across the board. Look at that group. Look at the automobile sector. When the cars come back in and you look at the valuations there, I think you'll see some dividends reinstated at some point. The travel industry across the board. Even within the healthcare field, consumer cyclicals, we talked about some bricks and mortar potentially, not necessarily online. I'll look at some tech names in the PC world as employees come back to work and they're updating their desktops that may be 2 or 3 years old as they're coming back to work. All of those areas, again, look at the hotel, motel industry, which is your travel industry. There's so many bargains out there. Honestly, I'm a kid in a candy store right now.
Yeah, it sounds like it. So if I called you, you would say, no, I like Dell Computers or Hewlett-Packard, or I like Tesla or Chevy as specific stocks. Do you break it down that finely?
Yes, absolutely. When I manage portfolios, I would say my average portfolio has 40 to 50 names, and a lot of the names that fit the bill that I'm talking about. So, yes, I talk to individuals. When I talk to clients on the phone, we will discuss literally almost every position in the portfolio for those who want to discuss it.
If for those who want to discuss it, how many people do that, though? How many of them just say, let's go with a Schwab portfolio and I'll say 60-40 and make it growth stocks? I mean, isn't that how most people invest?
I would say, yeah, but right now you got to think outside the box because nothing is as it seems. That 60-40 split right now, I don't have any bonds in any of my portfolios. I haven't had them for 2 or 3 years because I don't think the rate of return is there, and I think the risk of owning long-term bonds now is very dangerous as rates eventually go up, and I think we'll go up sooner rather than later. So that split, what I instead attempt to do is purchase companies with dividends to supplement my lack of bond income. And leave more cash liquid that I can use in cases of pullback. And I think a lot of investors will start moving towards dividend payers to supplement that income, especially retirees who want that cash flow.
Are you parking money just in cash? It doesn't do anything, but at least it doesn't lose value. Well, it does a little bit, I guess, relative to
inflation.
But do some of your clients just keep it in the bank and wait, or what do you do about that?
Yeah, we've got a lot of cash. I deploy it as opportunities present. So some days like today, we'll deploy it where I see fit. And cash never hurt anybody. Cash is an airbag in a bad market, and it'll hold just an anchor on the way up. But a lot of my clients are 50 years and older. Many are retired, and they're not looking to take maximum risk. They're looking for balanced risk.
Yeah.
And it's hard to do that when you don't have bonds, and bonds aren't simply paying enough of a return. So you've got to get creative and, again, think outside the box.
I like the thinking, too. I mean, how many of us saw a pandemic coming? And then even as it did, I think one of the marvels of this Wintrust Business Lunch is talking to companies all across the spectrum and who was the beneficiary of the pandemic and who suffered. And the example I like to use sometimes is the people that make chlorine tablets for pools. Who knew that a pandemic would be good for them? But since pools closed and people were afraid to mingle, everybody wanted to get their own swimming pool. You couldn't buy a pool, and when you got one, you had to get chlorine, and there was a run on chlorine tablets. So if you were the chlorine guy, you were the beneficiary of a pandemic. Who knew? More logically, maybe, is what you just said about computers. I never thought about desktops being antiquated, but the technology is 2 years ahead of where it was when we all shut down. Maybe people are going to need to buy some HPs or whatever the brand is that you like, right?
Right. Again, back to skating where the puck is going. You take a macro view of the economy, and then you break it down to where you think. The pandemic really brought forward a lot of business for many of the big companies, the tech companies, and pushed out demand. Now that's starting to reverse in many ways, where there's a lot of demand coming who was buying cars? Nobody was renting cars. You look at where many of the companies in that industry stock traded, thinking they would never come back, and we got surprised. So, and because people are still being held back right now from traveling, etc., when they're finally released all over the world, they're going to go out and they're going to have some fun. They're going to travel. They're going to drive. They're going to buy cars. It's again, I think it's going to be, I really think it's going to be spectacular. I really do.
You're talking about the fourth quarter and then some, huh?
Yeah, barring anything out of left field, God forbid a 9/11 scenario or anything like we've been talking about that we can't predict, I think the trend is up across the board. But as we talked about, look outside of just the main companies in the indexes that are on the news every day. You've got to do some research. And unfortunately, too many investors that don't take the time to do research, they invest on headlines.
And you have to find a way to anticipate the Epsilon variant as well. Last question, do you like drugstores, pharmacies, pharmaceutical companies as a group?
Yeah, you got to be selective. But yeah, because if you look at some of the valuations, the multiples and the dividends many of them are paying are quite attractive. Especially, as we said, if you need income as well, and you're paying 10 times earnings for something, I just don't think that's an expensive company as long as earnings are growing. I'm not a guy who will buy a company trading at 180 times projected earnings 2 years out.
Stephen Esposito is the executive director, and wealth advisor, senior portfolio management director at Morgan Stanley in Lake Forest. We're out of time today, Stephen. We could go like this all day, but we can't.
Well, thank you.
We appreciate your time. MorganStanley.com is the website. Stephen's in Lake Forest. Nice to talk to you, sir. So let's talk a little bit about golf. Here's Nick Sherburn, founder, Club Champion Golf. ClubChampionGolf.com is actually headquartered in Willowbrook. They've got stuff across the country, but it's a Chicago-based company. Hey, Nick, thanks for joining us. You're on WGN.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us about what you guys do. I know a little bit about this, but tell our audience what Club Champion Golf is.
Well, we custom fit you for the proper clubs for your game at any level. And, you know, for me, it was 23 years now. I started by, you know, going to the Western Open and watching the best players in the world go out there to the range and watching them have their clubs tweaked till they perform the way they needed them to perform for them. And as a young, discerning golfer myself, I was like, well, why am I not doing that? And so that's kind of how the whole thing kind of came along. I said, can we take this? Because I was in the golf business. I was in the club repair business. Can we take this and take it to every golfer, beginning golfers, tour players, you know, you name it, up and down the row, and help them enjoy the game that they love to play? And that's what Club Champion does every day. And we've expanded on that motto.
I know that you're also looking for more people to help you, employees, so we'll get to that message in a minute. But tell me what tweaking a club means.
Well, I think a lot of people, when they go to buy new clubs, is they listen to their friends, or they watch TV and they see something, or they read a magazine, and they get online. And for me, that's great. It's great to do your research and love that. I still do that. But at the end of the day, our swings are these unique snowflakes, and we're all different. We need different products and different types of products to help us play our best golf with this game we enjoy and spend so much time on. And so, you know, that's what we do, is we take that out of the equation. We have full-time employees that this is what they do, eat, sleep, and breathe for a living. They don't give lessons. They don't do anything but fit you for equipment. And their job is to listen to you, understand your game, understand your passion for golf, and then fit you for the right equipment, no matter what the make, model, brand is, to make sure the next time you go play golf, you play a little bit better.
So rather than trying to fix my swing, they're going to say, all right, if that's who you are, let's at least get you a club that's the right length, right tension, right stiffness, that sort of thing.
Absolutely. Well, now you need to go take lessons. You need to work on your game. You need to practice. But if you don't have the right tools in your hands, you can't do those things effectively. These clubs react to your body. Your body reacts to these clubs. And if you don't have the right club in your hand, you can't do the rest. So it's a component that a lot of people, I don't think, put a lot of emphasis on. They think, well, I got to get a swing first. Well, no, you can't get a swing until you have clubs that allow you to make that swing. And so that's what we do at Club Champions, make sure you have a golf club that gives you the best chance to make the best impact and score the best on the golf course.
So you're not selling me Ping or TaylorMade or whatever. I'm buying your brand then?
No, that's not it. And see, that's where people get confused, is we carry all the manufacturers across the board, TaylorMade, Ping, Callaway, you name them up and down, and probably some you've never heard of. But our job is that they're all engineered to do something. Some launch higher, some launch lower, some spin more, some spin less, some hook more, some slice. You know, there's all these different components, and our job is to take that branding to an extent out of the way and say, okay, this is what you need. This is what we're going to get you. And it's all data-driven. So we use TrackMan launch monitors, the best in the industry. Mm. We use a Stan Putt Lab for golf, best in the putting, it's the best in the industry. And we use data to drive our decisions, and then the brand is the next part of it. So that's what we do.
How's business?
It's been unbelievable. You know, COVID's been a horrible thing, right? But golf was one of the things that you could do during COVID. It was very social distance friendly and outdoors. And so it's brought so many new people to the game, and so many people that maybe left the game and brought them back, that the golf is booming. It's the one, it's one of those businesses that's doing really well.
How's the employees for you?
Well, that's the thing we always need help on. As, you know, golf's boomed and we expand, you know, I started it as one store in Willowbrook, Illinois. We now have 86 across the country and growing. We're constantly looking for the very best talent. And, you know, we have a great training program. We bring our folks in for a month. We train them. We give them the best resources, best tools. But we have to find the right people to deliver this great experience. And that's what we're always constantly working on.
So are you looking for golf pros or warehouse guys or engineers? What do you need?
A little bit of everything. But that being said, I always tell people, I go, you'd be shocked by the people we've hired over the 22 or 23 years I've had this business. If you have a passion for golf and you have a passion to help people, we have the training program and the resources to make you successful at this job. But you just have to, you know, love the game. And so if you love the game and you think golf is something you'd love to get into, we'd love to explore that with you and see if there's a spot at Club Champion for you.
What's a job like then for you guys? Is it hourly? Are there benefits? Is it full-time? What do I do?
Well, it depends. If you're a fitter, a lot of jobs are full-time. If you're a fitter, you're fitting with clients and stuff, it's full-time. But we have warehouse jobs. We have manufacturing jobs where you build the golf clubs. We're across the board, a lot of the stuff. And you can go online to our website and you can go to the careers and you can see all the different openings we have across the country. But, you know, our job is if you have a passion for golf and whatever that passion may be, we can make, and whatever your skill set may be, we could probably find a spot for you at Club Champion, train you up and give you the tools to be successful and grow a career within golf.
What's going on with the world? What is it that is suddenly so difficult for employers from McDonald's to golf club makers to find employees? What's going on out there?
Well, you know, I don't know if I'm the best person to answer that, but I can tell you from my vantage point, I think there's a couple things. I think there's a lot of, like, confusion. You know, there's a lot of demand in a lot of different areas, and so there's a smaller supply of people. And so them finding what they want to do in life and how they want to do it is one thing. I think people, to how you asked me those questions, when they look at a job like ours, they're like, well, I've never really done that before. Can I do it? And so our job is to get on shows like this or anything else and kind of explain, like, listen, you don't have to be the master of this to be here. We can help train you and give you the tools and all that stuff to be highly successful at it. I also think, you know, kind of what's going on in the world with a lot of, like, things we're doing, a lot of with the government helping out a lot. I think some people are trying to figure out, you know, what they want to do. If they, you know, want to stay home, spend more time with their families, if they want to go work. So, yeah.
Yeah, it really has bought people time to reevaluate their lives. It doesn't make them bad people, but it does make them people who, for the time being, don't have to go back to work, may choose never to go back to work if it's a two-income household, whatever. But we really are in a unique state of flux right now, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. And that's, you know, you said it better than I did. It's just people are reevaluating what they want to do and how they want to spend their time. And that, you know, life can come at you. You know, I don't think any of us thought that pandemic was going to happen. And then, boom, there you are. So it's all those things. We hope that we can show that we have a really cool environment. And if you're a golfer, and maybe you're not even a golfer, but you're just interested in different things about, you know, manufacturing or helping customers, we'd love to talk to you because we have a really unique environment. I think a fun environment, a growing environment to work within.
We're out of time. Will we? Do you work in Willowbrook? Where do you work if you work for you?
Well, so our headquarters is in Willowbrook, and that we have a lot of staff in Willowbrook, and there's a lot of job openings in Willowbrook. That being said, we, like I said before, we have 86 locations around the country, and we're constantly hiring for different levels. So if you're interested, in Chicago we have a lot of openings, but if people are listening outside of Chicago, we have a lot of openings there as well.
ClubChampionGolf.com. Makes me want to golf, if nothing else. And get the right clubs, too, by the way, so I'll have the correct launch angle. ClubChampionGolf.com. Nick, congratulations on the success you've had and continued success. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us, sir. It's 12:45. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. Here's more business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Chicago's cracking down on businesses that steal workers' wages by not granting paid sick days. The city has reached settlements with two of those companies. Tri-City Foods, which operates 40 Burger Kings in Chicago, admits it failed to pay sick leave to roughly 2,500 employees. It'll pay more than $450,000 in restitution. Mondelez International's bakery at 73rd and Kedzie agreed to pay nearly $500,000 in restitution to nearly 460 employees. Each company was also fined $100,000. Chicago passed an ordinance in July of 2017 that mandates workers get paid sick leave. Molson Coors is cutting 11 of its economy beer brands. Milwaukee's Best Premium, Magnum, and Mickey's Fine Malt Liquor Ice are among those brands being discontinued as the brewer focuses on its premium products. The other brands cut include Keystone Ice, Ham's Special Light, Ice House Edge, and Miller High Life Light. Analysts say younger drinkers have moved away from classic cheap beer brands and towards new products like hard seltzers. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Time for the business of food and Steve Alexander.
Yeah, if you're a fan of tomatoes and anything made from tomatoes, the drought in California is going to mean shortages and higher prices. Of course, we can grow our own for several months out of the year. Our gardening guru, Jim Fazell, has been guiding us on how to do that on Mr. Fizz Fridays. And for tomato creations like pizza sauce and pasta sauce, or gravy, if that's what you call it, you'll also need other items, such as garlic. And
this is the time to plant garlic. The new gardeners that try planting garlic in the spring really are disappointed because about the time in June when the tops start going down and they go dig their garlic expecting to find nice big bulbs, they find out that the bulbs are about the size of a pea. That's just because there has not been enough time for the garlic plant to go ahead and make a lot of leaves so that it can replenish the roots. This is the time to plant garlic. Be sure that you prepare the soil very well because garlic plants will not develop in heavy soil. So if you're in an area where we have a lot of clay in the soil, make sure that to a depth of about 6 inches you have really good loose soil. And next June or July you'll find out that these plants are nice and big, and by August you'll be able to dig plants that have a bulb on the bottom, and you'll be real happy with what you have.
Well, if we have garlic, we have to have oregano.
If you're growing oregano, you need to grow it so that you have fresh green shoots growing at all times. And in order to do that, you need to trim it back. It's important that you keep trimming and picking it as it grows in the year, and it'll go ahead and grow for you. It'll still grow yet this year. But next year, you'll find that your plants have a lot more green on them, and that's what you're looking for when you want to harvest your oregano.
Mr. Fizz, gardening guru Jim Fazell, Chicago Board of Trade. We've got some profit-taking going on today. Beans are down 31 cents. Corn is off about 9 cents, and wheat's trading down about 4 cents. Lots of concern globally about food security. ADM's CEO Juan Luciano pointed out on an earnings call this week that globally 15 million tons of crop production were lost to unfavorable weather in the past 2 to 3 weeks. From the farm to your belly, today is National Cheesecake Day. We heard Mark Schulman, the president of Eli's Cheesecake, tell John a couple of days ago that there are 10 types of cheesecake in the world. Well, I think we can agree that the Chicago style is the only one you need. Tomorrow's National Avocado Day and National Raspberry Cake Day. Have a great weekend. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Speaking of hiring people, it's just such an interesting debate to me. And I don't know that people will be persuaded by the facts. Or maybe people cherry pick the facts to sort of support their view of whether or not unemployment benefits and the supplement are keeping people from going back. Heather Long wrote about this in the Washington Post. And she joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Hi, Heather. Welcome back to WGN.
Hi. Great to be here.
I presume you agree with me that this has really been a sort of controversial concept this year, hasn't it?
It has. It's pretty nice because we're in such an unusual time. I know we all keep saying that extraordinary. It's hard, you know, how many adjectives do you need to describe what's going on, unprecedented. Here's what I would say. I talk to unemployed people pretty much every day for the past year and a half. Can I find you people or in the data some evidence that unemployment benefits are holding back people from taking jobs? Yes, I can. But I would say that describes about 10% or less of the issue. these other factors, the child care factors, people still afraid to go back to certain jobs because they'll be heavily exposed to now the Delta variant, or just what I've been calling the great reassessment of work. You know, people are looking to do something very different or want more flexible schedules going forward, and they aren't rushing back to the same jobs they had before in the way we saw before in other recessions. Mm-hmm. So those factors explain a lot more about what's going on.
Heather, what have we learned from states that held back the supplement, the unemployment benefit supplement?
That's right. So there were 20 states that rolled back the extra $300 and the money to self-employed and gig workers in June, starting in mid-June. One of those is Iowa, not too far from you all. And what we've learned is this. There was no huge hiring boom in those states. But what you did see was kind of interesting. Who got hired changed. So in states like Illinois, we've seen this huge surge in teenager hiring, right? Because teenagers generally don't qualify for unemployment benefits. And in states like Iowa or Missouri, where those benefits went away, or at least they were cut in half, what you see is a lot more workers who are over 25, so in their 30s and 40s, coming back to the labor force. Employers are hiring those people, the more experienced people, and no longer hiring teenagers. So the overall hiring stays about the same, but they do have more experienced workers back.
Well, does that at least make somewhat of an argument for pulling back on the unemployment supplement in that the group I would like to see get work is not necessarily teenagers, but older Americans, 20s, 30s, 50s, whatever?
Yeah, that's right. And that's where I think certainly the data, if you're a truly data-driven person, it's a little bit for everybody. You know, again, they're like, the Democrats are right. This is no silver bullet that, you know, we're going to get a bunch of people, everybody back to work when you pull this away. You know, Republicans types are right when they argue, yes, but more experienced workers may come back when they're no longer earning quite as much money. And so I think, you know, there's arguments here on both sides. The ideal policy, which unfortunately nobody likes compromise anymore in America, would be to slowly roll it off. So, okay, extra $300 this week, then we'll have a few weeks where it goes to $200, then we'll have a few weeks where it goes to $100, then it rolls off. That would have been what an economist would tell you to do, you know. Clearly telegraph it's going away, but don't rip it all like a Band-Aid, pull at once. Unfortunately, that's not what happened.
I'm hearing from a lot of people that think when the kids go back to school, this changes. Is there any data to support that?
Oh, hugely so. I mean, sir, both anecdotal and data, we have certainly seen higher dropout rates or scaling back on work. So maybe working one day or 2 days less a week from parents. Obviously, everybody knows who has kids or knows someone who has kids. It's been a huge stress.
Yeah.
I was just talking to people this week, once again, with this Delta variant picking up. We're seeing young kids test or their instructors test positive for COVID. Camps are closing. Daycares are closing. Now, they may not be shut for months, but, you know, being shut for a week or two throws this whole dynamic into chaos once again.
60 seconds left, Heather. I wonder what we've learned about $15 an hour, a little more, a little less, the minimum wage. Do you think that this has been an interesting piece of data for researchers?
Hugely so. I mean, 15 is now the average in the United States in the restaurant industry. That would have been unthinkable even a year or two ago. But we are already there in most parts of the country. And certainly if you talk to anyone who runs a recruiting firm, they will tell you that a lot of candidates, particularly in the 30s and 40s, aren't even looking at a job unless it pays at least 15. So I think that we've burst that bubble. Whether it becomes the official minimum wage or not for the nation, we'll see. But effectively, we are there.
It's funny, though, the people that were advocating for that fought. Finally, they got a $15 minimum wage in a lot of the country. And lo and behold, it's not enough, at least not under the current circumstances. So I think there's still more to be thought about this. It's a really interesting piece. States that cut unemployment early aren't seeing a hiring boom. And the Washington Post, Heather Long's piece, the economics reporter. Thanks for your time today, Heather. It's nice to visit with you.
Thank you.